Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. I have to say that I've been a little bit nervous about this evening because it's our final. I did it again with the feedback. I have it messed up like that, but it's okay. It's taken care of now. It won't make that sound anymore. But I have been a little bit nervous about this evening.
Why?
Just because not nervous. That may not be the right answer or right word, but just thinking about our last episode of talking about 13 Reasons Why. This was an intense episode 13. Mm. That's the one we're talking about tonight.
Should we admit what happened?
Which, that you couldn't watch it again?
Well, you just admitted it.
And that I watched it again, and it was just as emotional the second time as it was the first time, even though you know everything that's happening.
Right.
It's a tough thing to watch.
It's a wrenching session. Had my daughter, my 18-year-old, and I were watching it together, and I said, "Honey, you can go ahead and turn it off," because mm-hmm. it was so gut wrenching.
Yeah.
To have to watch it again. I just decided that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna watch it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really gut wrenching and heart wrenching.
Yeah, it's just it's as I was watching it again this morning, I was, you know what's expected, you know what's going to happen, right. and it's still just it just really mm-hmm. It's challenging, and we're pulling some things out of this episode to talk about, and we want to talk about some other things in general, but I still feel like we're going to have to watch our time, because I think that we could still go way over hour just mm-hmm. even just talking about this episode, right. Because yep. we're going to talk a lot about, you know, this final day for Hannah, but we're also going to, and a lot of nuggets that just are really huge mm-hmm. in this episode, like, right. you know, Justin confronting Bryce, right. and Justin trying to talk to Jessica, and mm-hmm. the conflict there. So it's, right. it's just, there's just so much in this episode. Right. But anyways, we're going to talk about all of that. And it's just, I've really enjoyed these conversations that we've been doing and
I have
having
too.
Each week.
This has been an enjoyable journey.
Yeah.
Difficult, but enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap this up, but we will do more of
we're
these types
more.
Of
mm-hmm.
projects.
Right.
So let's get to our slide, because then we can talk about
ye old slide.
That's right. So here we are, and there's,
right.
a lot to talk about. And so the episode starts with Hannah kind of informing us that she has already recorded 12 tapes.
Right.
She had recorded the first 12, mm-hmm. and so she basically got through the sixth tape. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting is, she went into her parents' store and right. said that she needed one more tape.
One more.
So that sort of tells us that she had those 12 sets. Mm-hmm. She knew that there were going to be those 12.
Right.
And when she finished that one, she figured that she was sort of in a place where she was okay. She was,
yes.
She says that she was thinking, you know what? There may be hope.
Right.
And so
right.
I'm going to one last try,
mm-hmm.
one last chance for life, she says. And that's when she decides that she's going to go talk to Mr. Porter.
Right.
And so she goes to her parents' store. And
we
gets,
who know Mr. Porter
yes,
know that this is going to be a mistake.
This is going to be...
Unless he redeems himself
right.
with his final chance.
Right. Well, and so she goes to see Mr. Porter. But first, she goes to her parents' store.
Right.
And she, while at the parents' store, she gets another tape because she's going to record this interaction with Mr. Porter.
Right.
Now, if she... After the 13 Reasons right. little interviews,
right.
yeah, mm-hmm. with the executive producer and stuff, you find out that that Hannah, you know, she did this, and it was really interesting because one of the executive producers actually says that he feels as though Hannah sort of set Mr. Porter up to fail. Mm-hmm. Now, we're going to talk about the producer said that. We're going to get into that in just a few minutes. Mm-hmm. But first, you know, she says that there's one last try. Now, what I think this is telling us is that what I got from that is that, you know, Hannah spent a lot of time on those first six tapes, the two sides.
Right.
She spent a lot of time talking about them, mm-hmm. thinking about them and stuff. And she says that when she finished that process, that she felt like maybe there's hope. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people, that's what therapy can do.
Right.
Therapy can, you know, you go through and you want to avoid all of this, all of those negative thoughts, all of those negative experiences, and you want to stay away from them and keep them shut down and hidden away. But a lot of times just getting that stuff out, not keeping right. it in, but getting it out, sharing it with somebody else, somebody safe. She was sharing it with a tape recorder, so there was no feedback there.
Right.
But just getting it out sometimes is therapeutic in and of itself.
And it's interesting you should put it that way, of getting it out, because she really doesn't ever get the opportunity to do that.
Right, right.
And that's the tragedy of this last attempt.
Right.
Is that she never gets the opportunity. And I want to talk more about getting it out.
Right.
Letting kids talk.
Right.
And talk to them.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. We're absolutely get into that.
Yes, right.
So that I think though is a really, really important piece to all of this, because mm-hmm. you know, we parents often say, you know, what do kids have to be stressed about? Well,
the best these should be high the school best. Is the best days of your life,
and right.
I've never heard any kid agree with that.
Right.
College maybe.
Right.
High school.
Yeah. Right. And so, but we hold things in. And many times just letting it out, just mm-hmm. just talking about it, just, you know, I often refer to my office lovingly, I hope, to people as a dump. You know, right. this is a place where you can come and just dump all that emotional, mm-hmm. all that emotional garbage right. that you're carrying around with you all week long. You can just come here and just get, and, right. you know, we'll sweep it aside. And so that you can start fresh again.
Getting rid of it makes you feel better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Just talking about it.
So while this is happening, while she's talking about this this process, how she's mm-hmm. gone through this first 12 tapes, I found it fascinating how she broke her list down.
Right.
You know, she said that Justin and Jessica broke her heart.
Right.
Those were two people that she really cared about, you know, or at least thought she cared about.
Right. She was really close, well, except for Clay. She was really closest to those two.
Right.
I mean, in the beginning, at least.
In the beginning, right. Mm-hmm. And then she says Alex, Tyler, Courtney, and Marcus.
So Alex was the blonde.
Right. He
guy,
was the, he was one of the three.
One of her early friends.
Right.
Tyler was.
The photographer.
Right. Courtney.
Courtney was the girl that she thought she was going to, who she partnered with to try to catch the photographer.
That's right.
Courtney, she ended up right. kissing and mm-hmm. all that.
Right.
And then Marcus, of course, is the guy who mistreated her there at right. the at the restaurant. And so she says that the four of them
that's
destroyed
right.
her reputation.
That's right. Alex with his Tyler with his camera, mm-hmm. Courtney with that setup.
Yeah. Right.
And she was always disingenuous.
Right.
Courtney was.
Right. And then she
and
says that
Marcus.
Zach yeah. and Ryan broke her spirit. Now Zach, of course, was. Is the basketball player, and you know, he's the one of this list. I think he's the one that sort of got the bad end, because I think that he was being genuine when he was trying to.
I do too.
Create a relationship with her and everything, but she was so defensive and guarded that she couldn't allow that to happen.
Right. She chased him away. She chased Clay away.
Right.
And those were the two I think
right.
who were most concerned.
Right.
And felt. The closest to her.
Right. But she says that Zach and Ryan was the poet.
Right.
Zach and Ryan broke her spirit.
Right.
And of course, Bryce broke her soul.
Right.
Now, of course, missing from this list. So we have 12. Well, there's 10 there, I think. But that's because
nine.
Justin was twice.
Right. Justin appears twice.
He was on two tapes. And then, of course, we're strategically, they're missing Clay.
Right.
And Clay and Sherry. Those are the two that are missing
mm-hmm.
because Clay and Sherry, Well, I guess Sherry didn't do any of these. And of course,
that's right. Sherry's not mentioned in any of these.
Right. And Clay,
if you remember, Sherry was the one who broke the stop sign.
Right. Yeah. So she broke the stop sign. And she didn't really contribute to the destruction of her soul or her spirit or her reputation.
That's right. She didn't contribute directly to it.
Right.
True.
Right. And then, of course, Clay is missing because Clay was one who that she was really, really close to.
Right.
But I found it fascinating how she broke those pieces down because, you know, I think that as it progressed through the 12 that she that she talked about, it did get more and more personal. They broke her heart because she tried to have this relationship with them. Then her reputation was destroyed, and then her spirit was destroyed, and then her soul was destroyed. I mean, we're really getting more and more into who her at a core, and as it went through the 12 of them. So, very sad.
You go through that list.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, so. But this brings us, of course, to Mr. Porter. And so we have, it wasn't too far into the episode that she went to see Mr. Porter.
Right.
And she went in and, you know, I think that he started out okay. He goes, so I think his words were, what's on your heart today? And so it started out okay. But then almost 3 seconds into it, his phone rings. And it's like, okay, he reaches over to try to turn the phone off. And then a little bit later, his cell phone rings and he's like, she's like, you know, you can just take that if you want to. And he's like, no, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's like, you just want to say, turn the bloody thing off.
Right.
Turn it off and put it in your desk. Unplug your phone, your desk phone. Just turn the stuff off.
Give her Stop the undivided distractions. Attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many distractions.
Yeah.
And he could not focus on her, and therefore she could not focus on him, you know, what they needed to communicate. So those distractions were so bad.
Yeah. You could see him being bothered by the distractions.
Yeah.
But they really damaged the relationship that should have developed. They kept interrupting the therapeutic relationship.
Right.
And so you could never establish it.
Yeah.
So while you realize that he's troubled by it, it still did that kind of damage.
Yeah.
And he didn't have any way to stop it.
Right.
And maybe that was the beginning of the flaw here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So now what happens next is they start their discussion, and as they're talking, throughout this series, we've mentioned several times things that are sort of cues to somebody being very depressed, potentially suicidal. These words, if there are any words that a person would say outside of saying, I'm suicidal, these words approximate that the most.
Everybody who watched the scene between Mr. Porter and Hannah, I think watched it with how could he have known? Did he know? How could he have known? What should he have done? What should he have said? But these, you're right, these words really captured. I mean, when somebody comes in and says that, you have to stop. You have to stop the movement.
Right.
Stop the merry-go-round at that point.
She said that she's lost, empty. She doesn't feel anything.
Right.
She just doesn't care anymore about anything.
That, you say no more.
That,
didn't matter what she said after that.
Right, right. The thing is that, you know, what we know as professionals, and I think that everybody else needs to know, is that one of the strongest predictors of suicide, and especially in suicidal ideation, is hopelessness.
Right.
It's not even sadness.
No.
Hopelessness.
It's hopelessness.
And worthlessness. Those are the two leading, most important symptoms that a person who is at risk for suicide will report.
Right.
And so when you say, I'm empty, I don't care about anything anymore, I don't, though that is screaming I'm really in a dark place. Really in a bad place.
Right. It's the hope. It's I don't feel anything.
Right.
You know, that's a deadness of soul. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was like, yeah, he made a number of mistakes after that.
Right.
But the problem is, it didn't matter what happened after that. Didn't matter what he or she said after that.
Right.
This should have been enough.
Right.
To get things moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's, you know, we've talked before about some of the challenges we have in our field because of stigmas and because of the way that people sort of view mental health and mental illness in general anyways. But seeing things like that is so frustrating because I'm not going to be naive enough to say that it doesn't exist, because that happens, I'm sure, frequently. But the frustration is that, you know, when you know what you're doing, when you're working with somebody, you know those things. Right. You know what you're looking for or should know.
Should know.
And so it's unfortunate. It's so sad to me that there are people out there who don't. And we know that there are people out there that don't.
And we were so empathetic. We had such empathy for Hannah at this point because we knew she was reaching the end of the line. And this is her last...
Yeah,
this is her last attempt to try to salvage her life, but to salvage something.
Right,
and it just, you could see it. You could see the air come out of it when he missed that cue.
Oh, I missed it. And now, so I think that this is a message for all of us. Any of us who work with teenagers or young adults or adults or kids or whoever, and we work with people who have the propensity to open up to us or talk to us.
Right.
The key, the signs that you're looking for is if a person starts to talk like this, if they start to make these kinds of statements, everything else needs to stop.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
I'm not an administrator anymore. I'm not a coach anymore.
I don't care about the lawsuit anymore.
I'm not a teacher anymore.
Right.
Talk to me.
Right.
And this is where you were mentioning earlier. This is where we're going to. He didn't listen.
That's right.
If you watch that scene, almost every second of that scene was filled with somebody's voice.
Right.
What that means is that. And this falls to Mr. Porter, because Mr. Porter is the professional. Every moment is filled with a voice. That means nobody's listening.
As this scene was unfolding, as I was watching it, I could feel my body tightening, thinking, stop talking, stop talk. Just listen. She's about to tell you.
Right.
Stop. Just listen for a moment. Mm-hmm. And he never did. He kept filling those gaps with advice and questions, and you know, and I kept saying, stop talking, she's going to tell you, she's going to tell you.
Yeah.
And he never stopped,
and he wouldn't stop. Mm-hmm. and part of that, I think, was because he was pretty uncomfortable.
He really was.
He you could see that he was a little nervous, and he was no, that's not what I'm saying. So okay, well, you shouldn't have said it,
right?
But
that's right. Shouldn't have said it in the first place,
right? But it's the that uncomfortable to where he's just now filling the space with, I gotta say something.
Right.
And again, when a person comes to us and starts talking and starts sharing these things, silence is okay.
You have to be okay with silence.
You have to allow it to happen, because you know, we were talking about this morning when we were getting, you know, when we were kind of prepping for this and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there are times when I'm in session with patients and there will be silence for minutes. And you have to be comfortable with the silence.
Right. Right. In teaching, in pre-service teacher preparation, we talk about wait time.
Right.
And in teaching, wait time is the teacher asks a question. And you have to wait 5 seconds for the response. So let the students, and teachers, new teachers, inexperienced teachers will try to fill that 5 second gap. They're uncomfortable with silence. And you have to train yourself to allow the silence, But it's only for 5 seconds. In our business, it might be 5 minutes.
Right.
You have to allow silence. You have to allow mm-hmm. the other person to sit there. And first of all, it gives them time to formulate their thinking.
Right.
What do I want to say? Which we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yes.
And they don't know what to say.
Yeah.
They can formulate what they want to say, but they also, they then feel the obligation to fill that space. And
right.
that's what you want.
Right.
You want them to feel the obligation to speak.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the opportunity has to be there. You know, when you're, if they say something and you immediately ask another question or you mm-hmm. immediately jump in there,
right.
it doesn't allow them to finish the thought. It doesn't allow them to finish what they're trying to say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now they have to shift to something else.
Now they're on to another topic,
right.
which requires additional silence.
Right.
Now you have to give silence for that topic.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And so, you could see Hannah struggling with each one of those.
Right.
Because each time you asked a different question or brought up a different point, she had to recalibrate. And she never got to why she was there.
Right.
She was recalibrating to respond to him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it was very
so frustrating watching that.
It was very frustrating watching
it. I kept saying, stay quiet.
Like,
Shut up. Quiet. Please stay quiet.
So let's talk about a couple of the things that were some specific things that were said. I don't have it on the slides, but let's talk about a couple of specific things that were said
right.
because I don't want anyone to believe or let's just say it this way. Many of the things that Mr. Porter said were exactly correct.
Yeah.
They were right. However,
okay.
they shouldn't have been said then.
Right, right. The timing
was
timing is
awful.
Everything, and he didn't have it.
Let me give an example.
He was off his game.
Exactly. If he has game, he was off the game.
Right.
For example, one of the things he said was, you know, if you don't want to give the guy's name, if you don't want to say mm-hmm. who it was or mm-hmm. give the details, then there's not much, then that maybe leaves us with only one option. We have to move on. Okay.
Ooh.
That is harsh.
Him.
But it may be true, but you don't say that. Especially
say,
the very first time you're meeting
you
with them talking
it at
about
the
it.
End of the conversation.
Right. You say it after mm-hmm. like 4 weeks of sessions
right.
and you're like,
you've exhausted the issue.
Right.
Then you can, you don't start with that.
Because you don't know that that's the only option yet.
It may be,
right. but you don't know that at that time.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what was making my brain explode mm-hmm. when I was watching it, that you don't know that that's the only option.
Right. Not at
this
that
girl
point.
Has just been in your office for 3 minutes.
Right.
She's intimating mm-hmm. that she was sexually assaulted at a party.
Which she hasn't processed. She hasn't digested that.
Right, because it just happened.
And you remember a long time ago, Clay's dad said, before we get to the sentencing phase, because now
right.
she's thinking, I have to confront my accuser in public.
She even said, if I say his name, can you guarantee me
right.
that I won't have to ever see him again?
Mm-hmm. No.
No, I can't guarantee that.
Mm-mm.
But if you don't want to tell me, then your only option is to... And I just wanted to, it made me so frustrated.
Right.
Again, what needed to happen was listen. You know, I think that you asked me this morning, so what would have been the right way? What would have been mm-hmm. a better way? I don't
right.
know that I would say the right way, but what would have been a better way? What mm-hmm. is a different way to address that? I think that the different way would just be to listen.
Just to listen. Right.
Just listen. You don't have to. I know that I have said this in sessions before. You don't have to tell me anything that you don't feel comfortable telling me right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can talk about it. You can share with me whatever you want to share with me because I'm here to help you.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point you want to tell me, I'm here. I will stand beside you. I will do whatever
right.
I have to do
right.
or whatever I can do to help you.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But you're the captain.
Mm-hmm.
You're the
this
captain of this ship,
right?
Right.
Right.
And we're only going to go as far mm-hmm. and as fast as you want to go.
Right. And she wasn't ready to confront.
She wasn't.
Bryce.
She wasn't. Mm-hmm. And he didn't hear that. And he didn't hear that because he didn't pause.
Right.
He didn't take
he
the
didn't
time.
He didn't let her finish the story.
Yes.
So he didn't know what the story was
yes.
because he didn't let her tell her story.
Right. He's only thinking, and we see this repeatedly because we see it when he talks to Clay a little bit later. The thing that Mr. Porter, in much like an administrator, and maybe much like what was needed in the other high school that he worked at, he wants to get to the end now.
Solve the problem.
The right. The goal is to find the solution.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And everybody doesn't work at that pace.
Right.
Most teenagers don't work at that pace. They think they do. They think that they work at that pace, but they don't.
Yeah, especially this one, and especially after this final assault.
Right.
You know,
right. And I know that there could be the argument that, you know, of course, he had no idea where she, you know, at what point she was. Just to reiterate, just to really knock this home, if a person comes in and says, I feel empty, I don't care about anything, I'm communicating that I'm hopeless.
Right.
And then I say, you know, I don't feel like I can't say, we got to stop and listen.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you know. That person can look like the happiest person in the world out in the hallways, but if they come into your office and they're saying those kinds of things,
right?
That's it. Mm-hmm. You gotta.
That's right. You gotta listen to the story.
Yeah.
You have to listen to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a frustrating scene to watch.
Yeah,
it really was.
It made me sad because you realize that the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people. Get that.
Right. That's right. A lot of, we do it as parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't listen to our kids' stories. Right. You know, we think we know.
Yeah.
And we don't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very, it just makes me.
That was frustrating. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you know what the consequence is of this shortcoming.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, another little snip from that really got me was when he said, he was saying, did something happen at the party? Now he started out the questioning. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then he says, did you do something that you regret?
did you do something?
And I start thinking that sounds accusatory.
Right. It was.
And then
it didn't sound accusatory.
But then but she even said, yes. Did you do something that you regret? Yes. Okay. So she could have been thinking that about getting in the hot tub, that she shouldn't have gotten in the hot tub. Okay.
That's right. She went to the party.
Right.
I regret that. I got in the hot tub. I took my clothes off. There are lots of things she regretted.
And then he says, did you make a decision that you shouldn't have made? And that her wall goes up.
Right.
And it's like, why?
Why
would you say that?
Right.
Because now, I mean, again, this is still after saying, I feel empty. I don't care about anything. Because now you're saying, what did you do? How was it your fault that whatever happened?
Right.
Did you make a decision? Did you tell him no? Did you?
Yeah.
None of that stuff matters.
Mm-mm.
None of that stuff matters in this first 10 minutes that you're talking to somebody who's intimating that they've been assaulted by someone.
He just took over the whole thing and she never.
He was treating it like he was an attorney.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because he was thinking about the lawsuit.
Right.
Well, no, at that point, I guess he wasn't
thinking about the lawsuit.
But he was thinking as an administrator.
And he thought he knew what happened.
Right. Right.
He should have found out.
Right.
But he assumed that he knew
kind
of what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was so frustrating.
Yeah.
So frustrating. Because it just showed. And then when she's walking out, she's like, no, I just need to find a way to move on.
Right.
Oh. Nope, that's the only option. And then she goes out and she waits to see if he's going to come out after her.
And he doesn't.
And he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Porter. It's so frustrating.
Good old Mr. Porter.
Yeah. So the you know, there's only one option. You've got to move on. That's just rarely is that the case.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely is that the case.
Right.
You have to empower. You have to strengthen. You have to support. You have to do all those other things. That's what therapy is. That's what we do. That's our job, is to try to help people become stronger, emotionally stronger, psychologically. And he really didn't. He fell short there. So, and now I love the way that this was filmed, because of course it's being filmed with Clay talking to Mr. Porter sort of in the present, and mm-hmm. then Hannah's conversation with him in the past. And what was really good was, you know, Clay now is starting to take control mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. this conversation.
Right. And finally.
Yes. And he's saying.
Well, he finally listened to his tape.
Yeah.
And that helped, because he didn't know what was in that. He was deathly afraid to listen to
Well, I think that what really sent it was in the last episode when he got Bryce to confess.
To confess, right.
Okay, because mm-hmm. now he has the power. Right. Now he has some control mm-hmm. over the situation,
right.
and he can do something about it now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, once again, Mr. Porter kind of missing some opportunity, missing the subtleties of information.
Right.
You know, in our business, in our field, we use metaphor mm-hmm. a lot. We often have to read between the lines.
Right.
And he doesn't. And this is another example where he doesn't. He
God,
says,
no, he doesn't.
You know, Clay sitting there talking about it, and you know, he's talking about how everyone let Hannah down. And Mr. Porter says, you know, you can't love someone back to life.
Right.
And Clay says, you can try.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, what I take from that, because of course Clay knows that, right. that Hannah can't come back to life. Mm-hmm. But what he's saying there, I think, is that while you can't bring somebody back to life,
mm-hmm.
you can learn from experiences and correct things so that you make better decisions in the future.
And that's what Clay has been struggling with.
Right.
The whole time, what can I do?
Right.
You could see his frustration, his angst about wanting to do something
right.
and not being able to do anything. He was so angry with everybody else. He was mm-hmm. angry with Justin and angry with, right. angry with all these other people. But he never was able to do anything. And finally he gets into a position
right.
where he has some leverage
right.
and is able to do something. And that's all he's talking about here is right. that, no, somebody has to do something.
Right.
Guilty or not guilty, somebody has to do something.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. And I think that, just in a second, because this is sort of a side, sort of supporting that. But, you know, so when he's saying you can't love somebody back to life, and he says you can try, mm-hmm. you know, I think that we see him do that at the end when he, you know, he goes and he, you know, starts talking to Sky, and they decide mm-hmm. to go hang out, and they're going right. out with Tony and everything, because what he's saying is that I'm not going to make that mistake again. Right. I'm not going to ignore someone. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to, you know, judge someone. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to assume that I know what's going on in somebody mm-hmm. else's mm-hmm. life based upon the way that they behave.
Right.
I'm going to make a change. And by doing that, my love for Hannah mm-hmm. is living on.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. It is bringing the idea of Hannah back.
That's right.
It's, mm-hmm. but it's,
you this know. Is the rebirth. This is, right. you know, no, I can't, I know I can't do anything about Hannah,
right.
but I can get it right the next time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I can get it right with this person
right.
who has also been ostracized. You know, Scott
yeah. Yeah.
has also been marginalized and ostracized.
Yeah.
And now he's going to get it right.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I.
And who's the vehicle? Tony.
Yeah.
Again, good old Tony.
I like Tony. and the little aside that I was going to mention has to do with Tony, because of course Tony in this episode is starting to feel the pressure and maybe the some mm-hmm. guilt, and especially after Clay did what he did to get right. Bryce's confession, he takes the and it's so funny. Mm-hmm. Well, the division of age with this, the way that technologically
mm-hmm.
the kids are all on their phones and everything, mm-hmm. but they're tapes, audio tapes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He brings a flash drive of the tapes to her parents. Right. And so the parents who would be much more akin to using the tapes, get the MP3,
get
the flash drive. And the kids who would be much more
right.
electronically minded get the audio tapes. So I thought that was cute.
I loved Tony's explanation of how tapes work
yeah.
to Hannah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, a voice recorder on your phone, you know, except cooler. Yeah, but when he went and talked to her parents, and he says, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think I was. That, I think, is sort of a, almost like a, it's a confession that, you know, I knew this. I thought that I was doing the right thing, but.
Kind of what Clay did.
Right.
You know, let's try to make this right. Mm-hmm. You know, we've all been living under this now. Let's try to make it right.
Yeah.
So the two of them try to make it right.
Right. Yeah. Now the intermingled with this main story throughout this episode was the were the depositions
yes.
of the different students.
Yeah, we kept seeing the depositions.
Mm-hmm. And if you, it's again fascinating to see who was truthful and who wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of course, how sad is it that Alex wasn't able to? Right. Because Alex
took matters
shot into himself.
His own.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you know, Justin said that he skipped out on him; he didn't go.
Right.
But Zach seemed to be. Zach was truthful. Courtney lied.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Tyler was truthful.
Right.
You know, Jessica lied a little bit, said that she didn't know about the tapes and some things like mm-hmm. that. So it's interesting to look at those right. dynamics. But then, of course, Jessica comes clean with her father at the end. So did you notice, we didn't talk about this beforehand. Did you notice that when Jessica is in her room and she's upset mm-hmm. after having testified and everything, her dad was there mm-hmm. while she was testifying, and she kept looking over at him because right. she was hesitant to say much. That was the first time we saw Jessica's dad come into her room.
Right.
Every other time that they've had interactions, he's stayed out the door.
Right.
He mm-hmm. comes in and he sits next to her on the bed.
And listens.
And she opens up and she starts talking.
Because he listened.
It was right. like, that's it.
What you do.
That's parenting.
Right.
Parenting is sitting with them on their bed, sitting with them and letting them talk and listening. Letting them feel like they can talk and let some of this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a beautifully subtle thing that mm-hmm. they did in the movie or in the program that I don't remember that in the book. I do have to go back and read the book again, but I don't remember them sort of being specific enough with that in the book, but having that in the film was mm-hmm. wonderful.
Because mm-hmm.
every other time you see him,
right.
they were at the table and he never made eye contact with her while he was talking to her, or he was at the doorway and never entered her room.
That's right.
Until yeah. the end. And he comes mm-hmm. in. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
And he came in to listen.
Yeah.
Opened it up and listened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah.
You know, so we had the depositions, but the last thing really in this episode that we see
mm-hmm.
is probably, you know, there's, well, I guess it was been approved for, or sort right. of green lighted for a season two.
Right.
Now, of course, there's not another book, but the season two, I'm sure that we're going to find out something about Alex.
Yes.
You know, because of that
That's
whole thing.
The cliff, right. What happened to him?
What happens with Justin?
Right.
Because
he's homeless right now.
He's homeless and he just right. kind of leaves. He leaves, right. You know, he mm-hmm. confronted Bryce.
That's right.
Told Bryce what happened. Told Bryce about the mm-hmm. tapes, even though Bryce didn't hear the tapes.
No, these kids are juniors. That's right.
Bryce was a senior.
But Zach is a junior.
I think everybody else was. Yeah, Zach was a junior.
Yeah. I was trying to think of what he said during the tapes.
Yeah, he was
I'm
a junior. Yeah.
So they have another year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then of course Tyler.
Right.
With his guns and ammunition and everything.
Personal.
Yeah, that was. That was intense.
And so, when your kids say, "Mom, a little privacy."
Yeah.
Time to look into things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
Go into your kids' rooms. Find out what there's.
You had that stuff hidden very well.
Man.
So I'm sure that that's going to be. But, you know, that was very reminiscent of things that we've read about, mm-hmm. you know, with Columbine and some of those other things where they have those things hidden and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before we wrap up and everything, because we could go on there. I know we wanted to talk a little bit about just some of the parenting styles and some of the differences in the parents that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we saw a change in Jessica's dad.
Right.
Now, Jessica's dad, remember, he's a military man.
Right.
And so, to some extent, there is some... there is some training there that keeps him, you know, regimented and things like that.
Right.
But it was great to see that adjustment in his presentation at the end after he saw his daughter struggling in the depositions.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It was the depositions that softened him, because then he realized that there's really a serious problem somewhere here, and he needed to find out what it was, but at least he listened.
Yeah.
You know, instead of quizzing her, put her at the kitchen table and do an interrogation, which is what many parents would have done. He went into her room. He entered her arena.
Right.
This was hers.
Right.
And so she was safer there than on his territory.
Right.
So, yeah, he made two very good decisions.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The now, we don't see much of them at the end, but, of course, there's Courtney, who has two dads. And the only thing that we saw from him was he tried to jump in during the deposition to, oh, honey, you don't have to do this. You hardly knew her. Or they were talking about the picture and the photo of her and Hannah kissing. And her dad tried to jump in, but we really don't see much. But you certainly get the sense that they two are her two dads. They two are very rigid, very, you know, not emotional, not really connected to her. You know, remember they had that like very businessy like lunch at the little coffee shop, and very detached and not as emotionally connected.
Which is how she was,
right?
You know, planning dances and planning this and she was the social director.
Everything is surface
in it, right?
Everything
it's
is
all
surface.
Superficial.
Yeah, it's
dances and flowers and. You know,
make it pretty
right. Mm-hmm.
And so we have that that tendency when we are fragile, when there's something going on inside of us that is that we're embarrassed about, that we're not proud of, or that we don't like, we decorate the outside try to make it hidden,
put some tinsel on it.
Zach's parents. We don't really see them again. But Zach...
We don't want to see Zach's parents. It's his mother.
They're your
we don't know. We never see his dad. You know, it's just his mother, who's a despicable character.
Yeah.
Because she reminds me of Tiger Mom.
Yeah, we saw her again last episode where they're sitting at the table and, well, you're just not going to be able to do that anyways because you hardly knew her anyways because you're too good for that. You know, that kind of presentation is like... Okay, and he's sitting there like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you're right, Mom.
Mm-hmm. And his sister says, are you going to go to jail? She goes, no, he's not going to go to jail.
Of course not.
Because, again, he's not going to answer. Our heroes, of course, are Clay's
parents.
Because even though in this episode, his dad sort of showed the first signs of frustration with him. You know, he really became frustrated with him because he disappeared again. Right. He, you know, that's when he went over to Bryce's house and confronted him. Mm-hmm. He said, you disappeared again. You can't keep doing that. And if you look at that scene, you know, Clay is frustrated. He's aggravated.
Right.
Dad's frustrated. And Dad says, wait a minute. Are you giving me the silent treatment or am I giving you the silent treatment?
That's right.
Maybe I think it should be the other way around or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And
And he says, you know, you can't keep doing that. Yeah. But even when he did that, it wasn't accusatory. It wasn't punitive. Right. It wasn't, you know, I'm going to show you, do as I say. It wasn't any of those things. It was, look, you can't keep putting yourself out there in ways that we don't know what's going on.
Right.
You just can't do that. I mean, you're 17 years old.
Right.
You know, you're not yet an adult. You're not yet fully aware of everything that's going on in the world.
Right.
You can't be acting
can't
like that.
Keep doing that. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
but no threats.
Right.
No intimidation.
Yeah.
Just it can't work this way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have all of these dynamics.
You didn't mention Justin's parents.
I was going to. But we have all these dynamics, but the one that I find the most frustrating, you found Zach's mother very, very despicable, as you said. One of the most frustrating to me is Justin's mom.
She's the worst.
That when she obviously chooses the, her boyfriend over Justin, and you know, we do a lot of forensic work here.
Yeah.
And how many times do people report that stuff? These guys that we're evaluating.
I have written that many times, that they're choosing their partner rather than their children.
Yeah. And it's so, so unfortunate.
And he was such a scumbag. I'm sorry.
The boyfriend. Yeah.
I mean, a drug dealer and a drug addict and a bully and a thug.
And it makes you...
I just want him just...
As the season, the series progressed,
right.
I felt more and more bad.
Yeah, you did.
Justin.
Exactly. I said that in that, I don't know which scene, which tape it was, but you begin to realize what Justin is struggling with, and your anger with him turns to,
right,
not sympathy as much as understanding.
Pity, you know, almost.
Yeah, like, dang.
Yeah.
No wonder.
Yeah. Know?
And he really wasn't a bad guy. I mean, he did some wrong to Hannah, you know, that one. But it was that's what teenagers do.
But really, I mean, he took the picture. He showed friends, which is not something atypical that friends would do. But right. Bryce sent it out.
That's right. That's right. It wasn't Justin who did
right.
that.
And Justin, if Justin was guilty, I think the main thing Justin is guilty of is cowardice.
Heirs of omission.
Right.
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 Whereas Bryce is heirs of commission.
Right.
Okay.
And his parents were absent throughout the entire thing. We never saw his parents.
Speaking of absentee parents,
right.
They were literally absent. I don't know where they were vacationing.
But they provided financial right. means, but mm-hmm. that was it.
Yeah, you could buy good weed and keep mm-hmm. it in the living room and drink yeah. good whiskey. And...
That's right. So the point, I guess, with all of this, as we look at the parents and we look at the kids, mm-hmm. There are absolute relationships between the parenting styles
right.
and the kids, mm-hmm. the teenagers' behaviors. And that exists in every school. There's a Bryce, there's a Justin, there's a Courtney. There are students like that in every school. And so I think that part of what makes this program in the book very authentic
mm-hmm.
is that these aren't hypothetical characters.
No.
These are real people.
These are dimensional characters. They're three-dimensional characters.
Mm-hmm.
They're not flat. They're not they're typical, not stereotypical.
Right.
Right. Are you going to talk more about parents?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll be quiet.
But it's just, we tend to watch programs like this and we say, oh, well, you know, there's not a parent that would do that, or there's not a kid that would do that. Absolutely, it happens.
Everything you saw about these parents happens. Behind all these children are these kinds of parents.
Right.
You know, with these different parenting styles,
mm-hmm.
different levels of attention and concern and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think of the gun collection.
Right.
And I'm thinking, this is Columbine.
Right.
They didn't know. Their parents didn't know.
Right.
That all that was going on.
Yeah.
They have no idea that their son is going through this.
Yeah.
And what he's called.
Yeah. Yeah. So as parents, we have to, just as we were talking about with Mr. Porter,
mm-hmm.
so it's so important for us to listen. It's important for us to communicate and to talk with our kids but when we're talking with our kids, it's important that we do more listening than we do talking.
Right.
Right.
Talking to your people, you know, that's an interesting point, because you have to talk to your children.
Right.
No. Stop talking. You have to listen to your children.
Right.
When we say you have to talk to your kids, mm-hmm. what we mean is you have to listen to your kids.
Right.
You have to listen to their stories.
Right.
To listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Because we believe that we know the answers.
As we were teenagers.
They don't believe that we know the answers, but
God,
we believe that we know the answers, and we will tell our kids, oh, no, I've been through this. I know.
I know what you're dealing with.
However, we don't.
No.
Because their life today is very, very different. Their life today is different than things were at the time that they were born.
Right.
You know?
That's right.
So 15 years ago, 17 years ago, it would have been different.
I asked my kids if the party scenes were accurate. I said, oh, yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah.
They get kegs, they drink. People are smoking weed, smoking cigarettes, and drinking, and doing other kinds of drugs.
Yeah.
High school parties.
Right.
That used to happen in college.
Right.
Not high school.
Right. So you have to be, as parents, you know, if there's, you know, I would never, what am I trying to say? When it comes to this whole, the totality of this program.
Right.
I would never put what happened to Hannah on Hannah's parents.
Remember I asked you a little while ago, see, are you going to talk more about parents?
Mm-hmm.
My question was going to be,
mm-hmm.
is there anything about Hannah's parents that would lead you to think that this was somehow their fault?
Right. I just answered that. Preemptive answer. No, I wouldn't say it was their fault, nor would I say that it was Clay's fault or Jessica's specific fault or any of their Bryce gets close, but it was a combination of all of these things. I think that there's something that everyone could have done differently. And I think that there's, had any one of them done differently, it probably would have ended up with a different outcome.
Yeah.
Had Hannah's parents recognized a few other things,
right.
Things would have been different.
Right.
Had Clay spoken up, things would have been a little bit different. Had, of course, the thing with Bryce not happened, yeah. Things would have been different.
Yeah.
So there's little things, but, you know, it's sort of the, you know, the one drop that puts it over the edge. You know, we want to blame that one drop, but there were a whole lot of drops that went into the cup before that one.
Yeah, so it wasn't, you know, they worried about the store. They were focused on the store and making the store work and all that. And they were both distracted by that. And they were the hair.
Yeah.
We mentioned
exactly.
A week ago. They didn't realize that she'd even had her hair cut.
Right.
But it's not really their fault. They they contributed, but they weren't causal.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Because I thought a lot about that. You know, we tend to blame people. You know, well, it must be the parents. It must be. The parents may have contributed, but by and large, I think they seemed like adequate parents.
Right, right.
Adequate to good parents.
Right.
I mean,
they seemed like normal parents.
Right.
They seemed like
they did
typical.
Some things right, and they did some things not so well.
Right.
Which is probably
again,
most fall into that category.
Exactly. And again, I think that the message is that we don't know what impact our actions are going to have on somebody else.
And what we say that would hurt.
Right. We have to offer redirection. You know, we can never be so afraid that we never want to be in a position where we're so anxious about saying something to our kids because of fear that, you know, that we don't say it.
No, you can't parent out of fear.
Right. So you have to say something. But when you are attuned to your kids, when you understand them, when you have a relationship with them that's strong enough to withstand some of that, then you're going to be okay.
And you're
going to
be all right.
You know, it's hard. You know, when it comes to Hannah's parents, sometimes it feels like it would be very difficult to not have seen some of this stuff going on.
If you were her parents.
If you were her parents.
Right.
Because she was going through a lot.
Right.
And
though she may not have shown.
I was going to say, Hannah hit it well.
I mean, she really hit to the very end.
She did a good job. I mean, even to the point where she's walking in to mail that package, and the guy from the poetry thing came by, and she goes, oh, yeah, I'll stop by.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like she's okay on the outside until the end.
Right.
But we have to listen to our kids. We have to make sure, you said this before, you know, if you're going to, when you're managing your kids, when you're working with them, when you're trying to redirect them, when you're trying to provide them guidance, the first thing that they have to know is that you love them.
That's right. I said, if you're going to punish your children, if you want to use any kind of draconian, aversive punishments, especially those. Your kids better be absolutely certain that you love them, or you're going to alienate them.
Right. Yeah, you're going to push them away.
Right.
And not that Hannah's parents punished or did any of that kind of stuff, but they were distracted.
They were distracted.
And I don't think that Hannah felt as though she could say anything to her parents because they were so stressed with everything else.
That
I don't think that she necessarily would have thought that they were as available to her as they otherwise should have been.
Right. That's right. It wasn't anything they did.
Right.
It was just that she didn't want to burden them.
Right.
So she didn't tell them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
I was amazed that I couldn't watch that again last night. That shocked me.
Yeah.
But the power of it all. And I like the epilogue, the little wrap up that they did.
Yeah.
With the producer.
Yeah.
That's worth watching.
Yeah. If you haven't watched that, do watch it because they have some of the actors, the executive producers. They even have a little bit of with the guy who wrote the book, John Asher.
Yeah.
It's a great, because I agree with them. I think that, you know, suicide is something that we avoid overtly. Mm-hmm. We work really hard to avoid.
Not to say the word.
Not to even say the word.
Right.
You know, she harmed herself. Right. You know, she...
Is she in danger of hurting herself?
Right.
That's called suicide.
Right. And we need to be able to talk about it if we want to have any hope in finding ways to manage it or to resolve it or to prevent it.
Because when we say the word, first of all, it demystifies it. It reduces its power.
Okay. Right.
The other thing is, if you don't say it, if you don't use the word, you start to avoid, you know, it's unthinkable. I can't say the word. It's unthinkable. It is unthinkable because you won't say the word.
Right.
Say the word. Get rid of its authority, get rid of its power,
mm-hmm.
and then you can deal with it. Otherwise, it remains unthinkable, and then nobody does anything.
Right,
which is the whole point of this movie.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So
say
if your kids are struggling, if you know any teens or anybody mm-hmm. who's struggling,
mm-hmm.
ask, talk about it.
Right,
you know, get them help.
Right,
because there's help. There's help available.
There's help available.
There's lots of
help available.
There's better than Mr. Porter out there, you know?
Right.
Because...
And if you weren't before watching it, you're going to be better after watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow.
So, all right. I think that's all.
That's all. We'll do this again.
We have really enjoyed this whole series. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to this and you found it at all helpful, you know, we'd love to hear from you. If you're listening to it on iTunes, we'd love for you to write a review on iTunes. Mm-hmm. We, you know, trying to boost our visibility on
our footprint. On
oh, that's good. Good job. On iTunes, just to get more people listening. And we'd love to hear from you guys. Yeah. If there's any mm-hmm. particular, films or stories that you would like for us to talk about, whether they're books or movies or series or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few that we're working on, but we'd love to talk about them. If you write to us, let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm. And I'll ask some of my daughter's teenage friends what they're watching these days
mm-hmm.
and why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Adventure Time.
Right. Is that a movie? Is that a series?
It's a cartoon. It's okay. It's an animated series. Yeah,
I'm just catching up with South Park, so give me a break.
Oh, that's a good one, too. All right. So I think that's all.
Okay.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you, guys.
Like us on and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. We have lots of things on there.
Right. Stacking up, isn't it?
Lots of things. Right. I think we are recording into the 140s.
140s.
For some of our, since we've joined PsychReg. So that's just since February. So, check it out. We got lots of stuff up there. Mm-hmm. So, all right. That is it for today.
Right.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Mm-hmm.